the way they look. I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small, they're for sale, hell, I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns. Well, I really like 22 Mag, 45 lever with the Winchester tag. I like my double barrel, had it most of my life. 357 was a present for my wife. I like guns, I like the way they look. I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small, they're for sale, feel I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns.
Hello, and welcome to New Shooter Canada. Our goal is to inform, update, and entertain the new shooter about the many fun and exciting aspects of sports shooting in Canada. Please remember that the show's content is simply the opinions of the hosts and our guests. And remember what they say about opinions. Everybody has one. So without delay, let me introduce our hosts, George Hatch and Tom Donnelly.
I like guns. I like the way they look. I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small, they're for sale. Hell, I want them all.
Hello and welcome to episode 13 of New Shooter Canada. How are you doing, Tom?
Good, yourself, George?
Not too bad, not too bad. I think this episode might need to go down as the episode that almost didn't happen. Between my work schedule.
It was hard synchronizing things.
Yeah, life schedules, work schedules, oh my goodness. But we managed to whittle out a bit of time here, so how about we hop into what we did in guns, and I'll start us off. Last month or so, I've been listening to a lot of the Armed Squirrels and Tom talking about, not my Tom, Squirrel Tom, talk about Appleseed, and he's passionate about it.
He's really passionate about it.
He's planted the seed. The Appleseed seed has been planted. So I'm contemplating. So I didn't actually shoot anything this week, but I've decided to attend an Appleseed. I'm going to be attending the March. I don't have the dates in front of me. I believe it's March 21st and 22nd.
Excellent. Excellent.
So I'm going to have to figure out how to get my guns across the border. Stacy, who's their admin, is actually, I don't know if she's the shoot boss, but she's an admin of some kind for it. So she's been, she sent me my invitation, and I guess I gotta get an ATF Form 6 and get that filled out. So she's created a Facebook group with a bunch of Canadians that are going. So I've been kind of watching them talk about their progress, so next weekend, maybe this week, I'll look into getting that filled out. So as once I get the form, on maybe the next episode, I'll go over the form and share with the listeners exactly what the Form 6 is and the process and what you got to do and whatnot. So be good for any shooters that want to do any competition shooting down in the States. So that's about all I've done in guns, is just been looking into the Appleseed shoot and preparing to do the Form 6 with the ATF.
They were pretty good. I contacted the ATF a couple years ago, six, and they're pretty accommodating. The trick is you put down everything you own. So if you put down every gun that you own, because if you go over the border, if the gun isn't on the list, you don't bring it in the country. So it put down everything and put down like 5,000 rounds of ammunition, just the absolute maximum. You don't have to bring everything in. But when I did it, I think I called them, they mailed it to me, and they just told me to fax it to them. And once I got the ATF Form 6 back, you just contact the CFO, and they do a border ATT. And usually they'll give you four or five crossing points. They'll give you a couple land crossings and a couple airports. So once you get it, it's pretty easy. You just got to be careful. If you're going, say, down to New York State, don't bring your AR. It's illegal in New York State. But Michigan, or the Appleseed's in Michigan, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're pretty accommodating. And even if you can't bring your guns over for some reason, I know Stacy and Beaufred Ranch have offered to let anybody, any Canadians come down and use their guns. So even if you can't bring a gun over, there'll be a gun down there for you to use at least.
Oh, that's good. So that's all I've done in guns this week. How about yourself?
Where's my show notes here? I don't see it. It's gone.
I see something about a new rifle.
Oh, there's something else I was going to do, too. Okay, well, two things. I didn't actually, like yourself, I didn't actually do any shooting this week. But I did go up to the range last Sunday because my club's kind of strange. We don't take members throughout the year. We either take members once a year, November, December, and we put them all through at once. And then we do the club-level safety course in the morning, and then we do the live shoot in the afternoon. So since I work late shift, I wasn't going to be there at 9 o'clock to teach the course. No. That's just not going to happen. But John showed up, and he did the course with a couple other instructors, and they asked me to come in the afternoon to be one of the ROs because we have all the different action types. So you usually have one instructor for each action types, and you just rotate people through. And I got really lucky because I got revolvers again. And John has, I'm not sure how old it is, he's got a Colt Python 357. And I have been in love with this gun for 4 or 5 years. So the first thing I walked into him, I said, John, you bring the Python? He said, yep. I said, you doing revolvers? I said, yep. He said, okay. So that's all I did is get to fondle this beautiful gun all day long, but I never actually got to shoot it. But it's just gorgeous.
Now, you're a member of a couple ranges, right?
I'm a member at Port Perry. I was a member at Union for a while, but we had issues with our action pistol. And it just, there was so many FUDs in the club, I left. But I'd like to get into Peterborough again. I'm thinking maybe getting back into Ipswich next year. So I'll have to speak to Chris and see if I can get into Peterborough.
Now, the one that you took me out to, that was Port Perry, right?
That's Port Perry.
That's a nice course.
It's a nice range. They don't have a lot of leagues. They do. They have a Bullseye, boring. PPC, a little less boring. And then we shoot an old course of fire that's been around since the late 70s called ORSA, which is Ontario's Recreational Shooters Association. And what it was is back in the 70s, before IPSC came in, the big thing in Ontario was ORSA. And eventually, of course, IPSC went out and ORSA's gone the way of the dodo. And I think we're the only club in the whole province that shoots ORSA. But it's good for basic training, but it's boring because nothing changes. It's the same stages all the time. So there's no challenge. There's no gaming yet. You know exactly what stages you have to do all the time.
Right.
And that's it. So I'd like to get back into IPSC again, but I have to wait till I get my new glasses so I can see the frickin' front sight. And the only other thing I did, I bought a new rifle. I had, at one point, I had a Ruger 7722 and 22 Magnum, and it was a varmint configuration. So this sucker had like a 24-inch heavyweight barrel and this laminate stock. It had to weigh 12 pounds before optics. It was beautiful, but it was just impractical. It's not good for hunting. It's just meant for taking to the range, target shooting, and that's it. So I already have an AR that I'm stuck with doing that too. So I sold the 22 a couple of years ago, and I went out and I bought the new Marlin XT22 and 22 Magnum. And I got it in a blue stock, a blue barrel, and a wood stock. I know Trevor doesn't like it, but it's gorgeous. I like wood stocks. I really do.
I'm with you. I have no prejudice against wood. What was it again? A Marlin?
A Marlin XT22. So it has the medium sporter weight barrel that Marlin puts on them, but it has their new Pro Fire Trigger system, which is similar to the Savage AccuTrigger. So it's got the internal trigger shoe, so you have to pull back the first shoe before you can actually, I think, disengage the sear, and then you can pull from there. But they rate the trigger pull 3 to 6 pounds, so hopefully it should be here by Tuesday. I've been tracking it on Canada Post.
And what I'll do is I will look for an image on, I'll get my Google Foo out and get an image, and I'll throw that into the show notes. So if anyone interested in seeing what it looks like can go to our website, which is newshootercanada.ca. Cheap, shameless plug.
We need all the cheap plugs we can get. The thing I like about the Marlin is I have a 7.95 also. And because the Marlins have that micro groove rifling, instead of having I think 4 or 6 Lansing grooves, it's got double that. And I find the right from the factory, Marlins tend to be super, super accurate. Like if you take a stock Marlin and a stock Ruger and a stock Remington, most of the time the Marlin will outshoot the other two guns just because the rifling just allows for such an accurate shot. But the guns themselves, there's not a lot you can do with them. Like if you get a Marlin, the only thing you can really put into a Marlin is maybe a Zabel spring kit. And there's the odd aftermarket stock. And then there won't be anything for this gun. There won't be any aftermarket stuff for that. But you know, people like going for the Rugers because there's so much you can do with them.
Yeah.
But for the money, I think it was $250 for the rifle, which is less than any Ruger. And they had a Black Friday special on shipping, so I got the shipping and the extra large material handling charge taken off. So I get it $250 plus taxes to the door. So I'm looking forward to it.
That's cool. Now, I'm not familiar with that rifle at all. Is that bolt action or semi?
It's bolt action. It comes with 2 magazines. I believe it comes with a 4-round and a 7-round. I don't think it comes with 10-round, 4- and 7-round magazine. It's drilled into tap, but it also has the groove mount for putting a 22 scope on it. So I actually, when I ordered the rifle, I ordered the scope bases because I have a scope ready to put on it anyway. And it has adjustable sights, the wood stock. It has studs on it, so you can put a sling on it or a bipod. It's just a basic no-frills 22. But because I know it's going to be accurate, I'm looking forward to it.
That's cool.
Yeah, you never shot a Marlin before?
No. The only rifle I've, I only have 2 rifles, and that's my cowboy. My, that's a copy of a Winchester. I always get the year wrong. 1872. But it's a birdie, anyways. Lever action 45 Colt. And my 22 is Savage 64 semi-auto.
Yeah, it's the old Cooey design.
It's the only rifles, and nothing against my 22. Like I like it, but I'm kind of wishing I had gotten a bolt action to start out with, and then gone up to a semi. But it is what it is. So my next rifle, I'll get. Will be probably a bolt action.
My second rifle I ever got when I was a kid was the 64. It was originally a Cooey design, and then it was a Winchester Cooey. My first one was a bolt action 22 single shot Winchester Cooey, and then I went up to the semi-autos. All my guns are semi-autos. I'm kind of reversing, going back to a bolt action.
I like the
bolt action, especially for teaching a new shooter.
Yeah,
there's less to worry about.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. Like if they get a little careless with the muzzle, you know that it's not as concerning with a bolt action, because once they've fired it and they haven't cycled the action, then it's less to worry about. But with a semi-auto, you got to be like watching them like a hawk and right on top of them.
Well,
although I've never had an issue.
Kids.
Yeah, well, and that's what I was thinking. See, my kids, when I got my my license, I basically put my kids through kind of the same training that I had just received. So before we even got out to a range, because I had my gun before I had had a membership. So it was, I'm going to say probably a month before I actually fired my first round. So my girls had all kinds of training around it and everything else and taught them everything. So I've never really had to worry about them too much, because right out of the gate they were trained how to properly handle it. But I've had there's been a few times I've had coworkers kind of go, oh, I got a buddy that wants to take his kid out shooting, and so when I'm in that situation, I'm like all over them like white on rice, just for that reason. Well, I got three magazines, so I usually start. I'll put one round in each one and then let them change them. And then if they're looking all right, then I'll do a couple rounds and then kind of build up from there.
Exactly. That's what I do, too. Just give them one round just so they know what it's like. And then the second one, you put two in, so you know, okay. And then when you fire it next time, it's going to be loaded again. So they know that it's going to be self-loading every time.
Yeah. Now, if I had a bolt action, I'm not sure I would go through. I would be that. Like I'd probably be more inclined to throw like five rounds in if it was a bolt action, knowing that they would have to cycle the action manually before the next round was chambered. But with a semi-auto, I'd rather err on the side of paranoia a little bit.
What I usually do with especially kids, I make them sit down.
Yeah. Yeah, I do the same thing.
I put a bipod on it, and I give them lots of time. And once they're sitting down, I'm not worried about the muzzle because I'm sitting right beside them. It's not like they're going to lift it off and swing it at me.
Yeah, I haven't had any close calls. I haven't had any issues, but I just, you kind of, it's the old adage, right? You let your guard down, and then that's when something's going to happen.
I don't think I've ever had an issue with the kid. Actually, no, I did. I have one young girl. She was probably 10 or 11, and she was shooting my Walther P22, and I was standing right behind her. And I always make a point of telling the kids, any woman, to have a T-shirt on, so no cleavage to catch brass, and a baseball cap on, so nothing to get in behind your safety glasses. And sure enough, when she fired it, the casing went straight up, went right down her back, and she took the loaded handgun and she threw it on the bench.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She was finished shooting for the day then.
Oh.
But luckily, the Walthers have the drops, safety on it, so you can drop it from 10 feet. It's not going to go off. But I've never seen anybody throw a gun.
Yeah.
Oh, wham! I said, that's it. You're done for the day, little lady.
No doubt. I watched this one YouTube video, and it put the fear of, what do you want to call it, in me. But it was one of those idiots that think it's funny to give like a super powerful gun to a totally inexperienced shooter. And this one in particular, the guy had, was a Desert Eagle. He had it fully loaded, gave it to this girl. She shot it and just, because of the sheer power of it, she's like freaking out and laughing, but she has her finger on the trigger and spins in a 360 degree circle, swept
everybody
there with a Desert Eagle 50 caliber finger on the trigger. And I'm like, oh my God. And none of them have ear protection on. And it's like, it hurts my brain. It hurts my brain. So when I see stuff like that, I get, a little extra cautious. I'm not known to be, what's the term, safety Sally. If I don't know the person, I get a little more leery, I guess.
There are people that take, and I've seen it happen because it happened to me when I was a kid, they take great pleasure in watching the recoil scare the crap out of a new shooter.
Oh, it just drives me nuts.
And you can't. You want to take your girlfriend shooting. You don't give her a 3.5-inch Magnum turkey load and let her fire it. She'll never want to touch it again.
Yep.
You take somebody new. You put them on a 22 if they want to try 12 gauge. You put them in nice soft target 7.5 loads. There was last year on video, a girl got killed, not from being shot, but from being hit in the head with the gun. After it was Smith & Wesson X-Frame. And those things are massive. And the way she had her arms bent. So when she fired it, the gun came straight back, hit her right in the head, and killed her.
Holy,
the recoil is so fierce from those things.
If I bring a new shooter out, I'll take him over to our pistol section, and I'll go to the end of the line. As long as if there's people there shooting pistol, I generally won't do this. But I'll take, and it's the last gun they'll shoot, I'll take my double barrel shotgun, and I don't have any reduced loads or anything, I just shoot full factories. But I'll load two in, shoot them one at a time, let them see the gun, see how it works, see what it looks like, see the recoil, and then I'll put one in, and I'll say, if you want, you can shoot it, if not, This is going to kick more than all the other guns you fired. And usually they'll shoot it once and they'll go, oh, okay, I'm done.
Yeah,
because they're not. It's not something they're used to, right? So,
I took a group of five girls shooting in May for Stacy's birthday, and their first shot, you know, it kind of startled them a little bit. But then the second shot, they figured, okay, this isn't too bad, and they had a blast. But if I had sent there and given them, you know, 3-inch Magnum or turkey loads, they'd fire one shot, they'd be in agony, they wouldn't want to ever shoot again.
Yeah. I was at the range once with Wanda. Well, she was just there watching, and this guy had 270 Win Mag, and I can't remember what the other rifle was. But, like, these are big, big loads. And he's got these two dainty little girls that have never, well, they were like 20-somethings, but... never shot before, and, you know, he's all, you know, oh, Mr. Macho, and ah, ha, ha, look at me and my big guns. And, like, these girls each shot at once and went, yeah, I don't think so.
And they'll probably never want to go shooting again.
And, you know, and then Wanda, because she's, you know, trying to be subtle, she's texting me, and she's like, oh, you're much better at this than he is. And I'm like, I text her back, I'm like, yeah, because I would want those two girls to come shooting again and eventually get their license.
Exactly.
You know, the one of the two girls did kind of warm up and fire it a couple more times, but, like, the one girl was totally turned off. She just went, wow, no thank you. And wouldn't even consider shooting it a second time. And I just, it's frustrating.
It's hard to get somebody back to the range once that's happened to them.
Yep.
Because they're terrified.
And now when they hear the aunties talking about these big, bad, scary guns, they'll draw to that memory and go, oh, yeah, I remember when I shot one. They may not be an auntie, but they're not going to be sympathetic, right?
No, because the gun is now something scary to them, where before it was something interesting. I had a couple of years ago, I had one of my coworkers wanted to do something special for her partner for her birthday, and she asked me if I'd take them shooting. And these two girls are anti-gun, NDP. I figure, okay, sure, no problem, because I really like my coworker. She's a sweet girl. So I took him up there, and first thing I started them on was my .22, and they loved the .22. And they spent 2 or 3 hours shooting all my different .22s, and at the end they asked me, can we try 9mm? I said, okay, but what I'd done is I purposely reloaded a box of soft shooting 9s. So the recoil wasn't going to be too bad, and I put them in a heavy frame CZ. So they did a couple magazines, and they loved it, and I said, now, here's some factory-loaded ammunition, just to know the difference. At least they knew that the snap was coming. So when they fired the factory stuff, she goes, no, we're not crazy about this stuff, but we liked your bullets. So they went from .22 to 9mm to full power, and now my two friends are pro-gun NDP lesbians. So at least I was able to switch them to pro-gun.
Wow.
I don't think
that's a phrase that I don't think you would ever hear anywhere else.
No. They're actually pro-gun.
Pro-gun NDP lesbians.
Yeah, they've actually come out. They've asked a couple times to come shooting, so when our schedules work out, I'll take them shooting. And a couple of really nice girls, and they had a blast. They're perfectly safe. They really enjoyed it. They took all their targets home, and the one girl whose father's passed away since then took all her targets and made this big target collage all over his wall. So she's got all her targets and this artwork all over her wall. Like, she's really proud of it. So
that's
hopefully
awesome.
They'll get their license soon and we can take them out shooting.
That's awesome. Well, all that from Marlin XT22.
Yeah, we do a lot of squirrels. We've been listening to Toby and Sticks too much.
Oh, that's awesome.
The one thing we were going to discuss this week was range bags.
Yes.
What do you carry in your range bag?
My range bag, for the most part, is a no-frills shopping bag that has my ear protection. I wear glasses, so that's my eye protection. But anyone I bring with me to the range, I always have like 3-4 pairs of eye protection for any guests that I bring, 3-4 pairs of ear protection. So that's in a no-frills shopping bag. And then my actual range bag is an ammo can, ammunition can.
One of the old stick ones?
Yeah. Yeah, originally I bought it for geocaching, and I'm letting my showing my nerd a little bit. Originally I bought it for geocaching, and then I ended up getting my license, and so then it turned into my quasi range bag. So as for what I have in it, I basically got my staple gun for putting up targets. I usually carry all my 22 ammunition in it, some lubrication, cleaning oil stuff, and what else? My own personal hearing protection glasses. That's about it. Extra staples. That's about the extent of my range bag.
I usually carry an extra set of ears in case somebody else comes by. I also like to carry the sponge ear plugs because shooting the headset with a rifle is pointless because you can't get your head, you can't get a cheek well because the headrests or the ear set sitting on the stock. So I always keep some of the sponge in my bag. So if I'm shooting a long gun, God, my range bag is massive. I went to NRA had a sale a couple years ago, and they had this 5.1 tactical range bag. I don't know if you can see it on the bed.
Yep.
It's massive, but it was on sale for like $75, so I grabbed it. But it has everything. This thing is just massive. Like you, I carry my stapler and my staples. I tend to carry tools a lot, especially for the gun that I'm using. I think one thing you should always have in your range bag is a set of gun screwdrivers, because the actual slot holes on firearms tend to be a little bit different than your standard set. So if you get these were $20 up at, I think I got this at Bass Pro. And it has about, 30 bits of all different sizes, but it's made specifically for firearms, so that way you're not going to be messing up any of your screws.
That's not a bad idea. I use
my pet peeve.
Sorry.
So my pet peeve is people using a pocket knife or a staple to adjust their sights, and you'll see this beautiful gun, and then the sight screws are just chewed to pieces, or the frame screws are just chewed to pieces. So always try to match up the bit to the proper screw that you're using.
I was just going to say, I normally use, I carry like a one of those like 50-piece tool things in a, in a container for like sockets, and it's usually got all the drill or the screwdriver bits and stuff in my car just for in case of breakdown or anything.
That's a good idea too, because you have easy access to it. If you actually need a screwdriver, you've got one in the car.
Yeah, so that's usually, so I don't have anything specific for my range bag, but I've always got that in my car. So, and it's come in handy a bunch of times. There's nothing worse than when you get ready to shoot your rifle and there's something rattling around inside. And you're sitting there going, well, that Uh-oh. Doesn't sound good.
That's not right.
I've had that happen with my 22 once. So what else you got in there?
I also carry another screwdriver set. Crappy Tire had this on sale a couple of months ago. And it's a precision bit. So it's got all the square heads and the hexes and the torque screws. So this is good if your grips come loose and you don't have any Allen keys. It's good for the mounting screws for scopes and for your scope. So I carry the two screwdriver sets. Another thing I just started carrying a few months ago is that I really hate guns that have fixed sights because it's a pain in the butt to drift the sight. And I've seen guys sitting there, I've seen guys take a screwdriver and a rock to adjust their sights. You start taking a, you have a steel sight and you take a steel screwdriver to it, you're going to damage the crap out of your sight or the frame. Wheeler makes a product and it's just a tap set. And all it is a small hammer with a brass end and a polymer end. So if you have to hit something on your gun and not damage it, you put a nice little polymer tip so you won't mar your finish. And it has taps in brass and in plastic. So if you want to adjust your sights, you're not going to mar them up by doing it. And it's amazing how when you actually need it, it comes in handy at the very last moment. I was at a match in the summertime, and this one kid who's had just started reloading had was having a lot of squib loads, and he couldn't figure it out. And he saw my range bag, and he saw this crap I have in it, and he goes, "Tom, you don't happen to have a set of scales in your bag, do you?" And he was lucky. I'd actually thrown my scales in the bag the night before for some reason, and he was able to weigh all his loads and found out which ones that actually have the squib loads. Now, another thing you should also have in your range bag at all times is Band-Aids. You cut your trigger finger when you're shooting, you're done for the day. So I always carry a small package of Band-Aids. I'll carry a package of bug spray. Because, you know, you're at a match and the bugs are bad, you're screwed if you're itching all day long. Another thing, you ever tried this Gojo handgun cleaner? Or handgun cleaner? Hand cleaner?
Yeah.
We have a massive bottle of this at the club. I picked this up at Home Depot, and it's just a small little hand cleaner, but it's the abrasive stuff with the sand in it. Because soap and water just doesn't do it. So if you know, especially if you're shooting revolver and you get all the residue in your hands, it's always nice to have some type of hand cleaner in your bag. So basically, tools, a first aid, whatever you want. I usually carry Advil and the Band-Aids. So if something does happen, you're out in the sun all day, you know, you're eating alive, you've got a headache, so, you know, at least you've got something to take care of the headache or any cuts. And I always carry water in my bag, too. I always carry a bag of water. But basic tools is something you should always have in your range bag, like, you know, screwdrivers, bits, tap sets. Another thing I started doing a few years ago is I bring all my magazines with me. Doesn't matter which gun I have, my range bag has all my 1911 magazines, all my Grand Power magazines. There's nothing worse when you get to the range and you realize, oh, shoot, I forgot the magazine.
Oh, no doubt.
No, the magazines all come with me nowadays. So no matter what I'm doing, is I always have a magazine. And I think that's about it. I do carry a couple brushes for cleaning out the magazines. I have a small portable cleaning kit that I carry with me, too, in case I have some type of obstruction, and a squib rod. If you're getting into competing, spend the $20 and go out and get a brass squib rod, because there's nothing worse than getting a squib in your barrel and have no way of taking it out. But we'll discuss that later, because we do bring up squib rods later when we're talking about revolvers. But, you know, carry what more than you think you'll need, because usually the range bag just stays in the car. You're not carrying it around, or it'll go to the bench. And if you need something, it's there. So carry more than what you think you need, because one of these days you're going to need it. And I think that's about it in my range bag. I usually carry the ammo separately. I don't carry it in the range bag, first of all, because of weight. The bag's heavy enough as it is. You put 20 pounds of ammo in it. It's gotten to the point now that I have a dolly, and I bungee cord my range bag to the dolly, because it's so freaking heavy taking it from the shooting line. But, you know, always carry more than what you think you need, because one of these days you're going to need it. And you can use anything. You can use a bag. You can use your ammo can. You don't have to go out and buy this huge 5.1 tactical bag. Anything will do. Anything that you can just close it up and it's strong enough to carry everything.
Yep. Yeah, I don't have the first aid kit yet, but I should be getting one of those, especially dating a first aid instructor / 911 ambulance dispatcher. I'm surprised she hasn't gotten on my case about not having a first aid when I go to the range.
Maybe you'll get one as a wedding present.
Well, I'm trying to get her to come on the show to talk about first aid and the importance of first aid and first aid training.
That'd be a good idea.
You know, the one thing about the gun culture is a lot of it has preparedness kind of as part of the culture, so I think that would definitely fall under that category.
Well, we can always ask Ken Kowalski. He's an expert. He's a medic.
Yeah. Well, a couple of years ago, I was chatting with him on Facebook and getting some tips from him, because I was looking at taking the first responders course, which is, you got emergency first aid, standard first aid, and then first responders. And so I was chatting with him about that. That was a couple of years ago, unfortunately. Never gotten around to it, so.
Yeah, I've never taken the first responder. I've taken a couple of the first aid courses through work. But, you know, basic first aid is something that everybody should know.
Yeah, I've taken numerous times the emergency first aid and CPR courses.
Yeah.
I don't have an up-to-date one, but I've taken them in the past, so I've got the knowledge. Your knowledge never expires. You might get rusty, but so.
You're thinking, geez, do I count 15? How many presses do I do? I actually went through my first aid book and refreshed it on a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about it. I went through it and just refreshed myself with the CPR because luckily I've never had to do it. But
yeah, and from what I understand, I could be wrong, so out there in podcast land, don't hold me to this, but I believe CPR has changed. They put less emphasis, is it on the breaths? I think they put less emphasis on the breathing, and they just have you do straight compressions now.
Oh, really? You see, it's been about 10 years since I took my last course.
Yeah, me too. And like I said, don't quote me out there, podcast land, because I could be wrong on that. But for some reason, just in general conversations with Wanda, I believe it's something's changed with the CPR, and I was like, oh, maybe it is a good thing that, you know, you're supposed to go back every couple of years and get it refreshed.
Yeah, I think we had to recertify every year at work. Then I changed jobs, and I'm not the first aid attendant anymore, so I haven't bothered to recertify.
Yeah.
But the courses are cheap. Most of the community colleges have them on the weekend. You can take your standard first aid course in I think it's, when we did it at work, it was a 2-day course.
Yeah, that'll be your standard first aid. Emergency first aid and CPR, I think, is a 1-day course, but if you do the full standard, it's a 2-day course. So, all right. Well, let's get moving on to guns in the news.
What do we have in the news this week, George?
So I'm going to take the first one. It's, I was kind of chomping at the bit to get this show out because the news stories are actually starting to get a little dated. But I'm going to take the first one, and that is the reintroduction of Bill C-42. So I've got the... I'll put the link in the show notes, so if anyone wants to go and look at it. This is the Common Sense Firearms legislation. It got shelved because of the shootings in Ottawa. Well, it got reintroduced. I could not find the link, so I don't know the exact date it was reintroduced. So the bulletin I'm reading off of is the July 23rd bulletin. So just to remind everyone what the Common Sense Firearms Act is going to have is it's going to merge the POLs, the possession only, and the acquisition licenses into one. So there'll be no more POLs, it'll just be a PAL. Restrict the ability of the chief firearms officers to make arbitrary decisions and let the crowd roar at that one. Create a grace period at the end of the 5-year license to stop people from immediately becoming criminalized for paperwork errors. that's just, yeah. And
it's all common sense.
I know, that's what just kills me. And needless paperwork around authorizations to transport by making them a condition of a license. This one here is probably one of the greatest ones. They'll give you the license, but they won't let you travel with the gun. Well, if you can't be trusted with the license, then why are they giving it to you? Like, if you can't be trusted with the gun, why are they giving you the license in the first place? So that's one of the gems of this legislation. Requirement. This one here, I know in the summer when we were talking about this next one, require mandatory firearm safety courses for, you know what? For the first time gun owners. This one here is not my most favorite, because this will eliminate people from challenging the test. So anyone that, what was that gentleman's name that took the CFO to court?
You talking about Daniel or?
Yes, Daniel.
Yes.
If memory serves me correct, he challenged the test because the course was on a Saturday, and being Jewish, he couldn't take the course because that's their Sabbath. So this is going to be, for religious folks, this may be a bit of a challenge. You know, for me, I know I'm fairly religious myself, and I know I could still be, there's no problems with me taking a course or something on a Sunday. But, you know, That one I'm not too crazy about. But
yeah, well,
it's in there.
Their thing is that they can't do anything on the Sabbath. They can't do any work on a Saturday.
Yeah, yeah.
That would include taking a course. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's because they're with the and I don't know what other faiths how they work, but I know with the Jewish faith they're very strict on stuff like that on Saturdays. So that's going to be a bit of a bummer for any of our Jewish friends that want to get their licenses. Strengthen the next point here. Strengthen firearms prohibitions for those who are convicted of domestic violent offenses. Well, if you're not allowed to own a firearm because you've been convicted of a violent offense, I'm not sure how you're going to really strengthen that.
No.
Are you going to
be charged? You lose your license and you get banned from owning firearms anyway.
So are they going to forcefully say no instead of saying no?
So they'll yell at you no instead of sending a letter saying no. They'll yell go.
Yeah. I suspect that is more to appease the aunties and, all the people that are crying foul that, guns are going to be used in domestic violence. So I suspect that's kind of what that's about. So, and then the next one is some quick facts. The amnesty for law-abiding owners of the CZ-858 or the Swiss Arms family of rifles will expire on March 14th, 2016. The order declaring an amnesty period will allow owners of the impacted firearms to use their property. Intended amendments to the Firearms Act and Criminal Code would streamline licensing and eliminate red tape for law-abiding firearms owners. And then there's a bunch of quotes from people praising this common sense firearms legislation. I almost bought the CZ-858. I was actually looking at them because they look just like an AK. And so I'm not sure, because it doesn't really say here. It kind of gives the impression that they will still be... Are they still going to remain on the prohib list?
Those ones there, because what had happened is that the receivers for those actual models were a full auto receiver. That's why it's prohibited, because it was two... try to remember the story. There was... the one importer had them, and he was having a hard time, so he outsourced a second supplier. And they actually used old full auto receivers, which is why they're not prohibited. There are some. There's a timeline. Up to a certain date, they're fine. And then that one series for about a year that were imported with the different receivers, those are the prohibited ones. I think is it the CZ-58 just uses a standard semi-auto. I've never owned one. I fired them, but to me they're just like an SKS. That's the way I look at it. The mags are paying the butt. You're still using the same corrosive ammo. You still have to take them apart and clean them when you're finished. So,
well, it looks like, well, from this bulletin, anyways. And like I said, I'm working off the July 23rd bulletin they posted. So, I don't know if anything's changed, but so it looks like you'll be able to use those rifles until March 14th of 2016, which again, this is what I don't understand. They're either prohib or they're not. How can they be? It's like kind of being a little, kind of sort of pregnant.
Well, it's stupid because you can't right now, like you say, if you have an AK-47, which is a prohibited rifle, you used to be able to get SAPs, which are special authority to possess, and you could take them to the range and shoot them. And I believe it was, of course, Mr. Wyatt that stopped the SAPs. So you can legally own the prohibited rifle. You can sell it to somebody that has the status. You can transport it to a gun show, but you cannot shoot them. So I'm curious why, I'm surprised they haven't put a SAP tag along with the CZ rifles, because it is a prohibited rifle. And as long as your range is licensed for that class of firearm, you could take it. But if you got an AK, you can't, because you don't need it. You don't have a SAP. So I can see Mr. Wyatt's trying to sneak something in like that. Well, because it's prohibited, you need a special authorization to possess. And I'm not going to issue it to you. So good thing that this, at least this common sense firearm legislation has come in, because then he can't slap something that onto a CZ owner.
Yeah, there was. any listeners that might be interested in doing a little bit of scrolling into the past, the NFA on their Facebook page had the actual Parliament link where it went through the reading. I believe it's into the second reading. Actually, it's probably past the second reading now. So I believe, you know, my civics knowledge isn't that great, but I believe there's one more reading and then a debate and then it's voted on. So hopefully in the next, well, they'll be closing the Parliament soon for the winter break. So I'm assuming it'll be early next year before this gets voted on. But it's back on the table. It was back on the docket for second reading. That was at least 2 weeks ago. So it's chugging along. It's back and hopefully it'll be lost soon.
And we've got a majority in Parliament, so we know it's going to pass at least.
Yeah, because I think Harper's time is done 2015. Fall of 2015, he has to call an election.
So I can remember him saying that if he got elected, he'd get rid of Bill C-68 altogether. This hasn't happened.
No, but you know. This is not to bring too much religion into this. It's kind of our priest had kind of mentioned about the abortion issue, and there was a law that the conservatives were trying to bring in, and because it wasn't quote unquote good enough, it never passed, and now Canada has no abortion laws. So this is kind of, to me, this falls under the same guise. If this doesn't get support, it's better than nothing. It's better than what we have. It's not perfect. It's not everything we want, but it goes
a
long
way
in the right direction. So, you know, Harper may have said he was going to get rid of 68. He didn't, but he got rid of the long gun registry. This goes a long way to kind of reversing some of the 68 stuff. So, it's not perfect.
Politicians have to backpedal to satisfy everybody, so they're giving us a little bit, and they're giving a little bit to somebody else. So, like you said, it's better than what we have.
Yeah.
And it takes away the control that Mr. Wyatt has over us, which is a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So that is that for the Bill C-42.
The other gun in the news is a lot of people are familiar with the SKS issues we were having up here. Fortunately, when we first talked about it on the show, we actually recorded the show, and it didn't get out for 2 weeks. So there was change in the information by the time we recorded the show and by the time it went out. Because apparently the RCMP actually test-fired the gun, and it wasn't a slam fire like a lot of us assumed. And I got called out on Facebook by Brian Bolivar over it, but we recorded it 2 weeks before the results came out, so we didn't know what the results were. And basically, it was the disconnector. It wasn't a slam fire. The gun was actually going full auto from the first pull of the trigger because the hammer wasn't being reset to the semi-auto. You pull the trigger, it would fire. They tested 20 rifles. They all were semi-auto. There was no issues with the 20 rifles they tested. Then, of course, they took the trigger group out of that rifle and they put it in one of the 20 rifles, and, of course, they went full auto. So it was just trigger mechanism of the one gun. It wasn't a slam fire. But we've all are so used to seeing the slam fire issues with the SKSs. We assumed that's what it was. So we were wrong. It wasn't a slam fire. It was actually a mechanical issue with the rifle itself.
I believe we did say that was speculation.
Yes, yes.
And the bulletin did say that it was going to investigations.
Yes.
So, just, you know, Mr. Bolivar, just saying, you know, is all.
But if you own an SKS, I still stand by what I said, is you've got to keep that firing pin chamber clean. And if it's a Tula Arsenal and it does not have the firing pin return spring, put one in because you have a great chance of it going slam fire on you. Just saying, I've seen it happen. The kits are $40. You're better off to put it in to avoid any issue in the future.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I tried pulling up the website today. We're recording Sunday afternoon, December... December 7th. And the website seems to be down, getting a 503 service unavailable. But I was at work, and I went to the RCMP website and just clicked the firearms links, and they've actually got pictures up showing the two the differences between the two trigger groups.
Oh, I didn't see those.
Yeah.
So it's missing parts. It's actually missing the disconnector, from what I understand.
Yeah. And, yeah. I'm trying to go by memory. Like I said, we tried to pull it up, but for some reason their website's down.
Yeah, we couldn't get into it.
But I've got the link. I'll put the link in the show notes, and whatever technical difficulties they're having, hopefully it'll be resolved. And so you can go to our website, newshootercanada.ca, and the link will be in the show notes.
They're so popular because they're so inexpensive. Like George and I were discussing before recording the show, the Canadian Tire up near me started selling firearms a couple of months ago, which is great news. They even have pistol ammunition now. But they had, as an opening special, they had the SKSs on sale for like $145. And they had the bulk ammo dirt cheap. So it's an attractive purchase for the new shooter because you can get, you know, a fairly decent rifle. I don't know how decent they are, but for $150, you know, it'll group buckets at 50 yards. You can shoot all day. It's going to be fun, and it's not going to cost you anything. I wouldn't really recommend them for long-range target shooting or for hunting, but, you know, people do use them for deer hunting. You get a nice commercial factory load. They have relatively decent accuracy out to 100 yards, but they're just such an attractive offer for the new shooter because it's cheap.
Yep. Yep. And, that, well, anyone that follows me on Facebook or has listened to the show knows that my dad, that's why my dad bought one. They had them on sale, and he happened to be walking through a crappy tire and went, hey, that's a good deal. Bought it and, you know, bought a crate of ammo with it. And, you know, Bob's your uncle, and I think we've shot through most of that crate. So he just bought that, what, in the fall, or in the spring, rather, and we shot through over 1,300 rounds.
Well, they look good because they've been factory refinished. So except for the stock, they look brand new.
Yeah, they're a fun gun. They're, you know, they you got to appreciate what they are. They're a World War II, well, I guess they're post World War II, because the one my dad's got is 1952. But they're Cold War Soviet bloc battle rifles. So, you know, you take it for what it is. You're not going to be dropping rounds in hole after hole, but, you know, they're a great gun. They're fun. My dad and I take his out shooting all the time, and we just have a blast.
Oh, yeah, for the fun issue, they're great. The only thing I discover is that you got to really be careful because that receiver is straight up and down. Like, you've got your stock and then the bolt receiver. You got to be careful. You don't put your face too close to that sucker because it'll come back and give you bleeding nose.
Yes.
I did it once. It just touched my nose. I better pull it back a little bit.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a mild cartridge. It does have a little bit of recoil, so just keep your face away from the back of the receiver.
Yeah. So that takes care of the guns in the news. And the main topic is going to be all about Tom. This was his project. So I will turn it over to you for the main topic.
Well, we were discussing last week that we're going to do micro topics about buying new guns. So we figured since George likes revolvers, we would continue with revolvers this week. The wheel gun used to be really, really popular. Like when I was a kid, everybody had a revolver. And it's not as popular as it used to be. In this day of compact, high-capacity autoloaders, not many people use a six-shooter for personal protection or sports. Revolver sales once dominated the handgun market, and law enforcement sales was the biggest percentage of the market, but their limited capacity and low power proved to be ineffective for law enforcement. So they ended up basically going to single-stack nines and then went to double-stack nines. And like always, the consumer market follows the law enforcement market. Like for today, when the cops switched to Glocks, now everybody's using Glocks. But thanks to the popularity of things like cowboy action shooting, the single action pistols are very popular once again. You couldn't find a single action 20, 30 years ago, and then SAS came along, and now everybody's making a single action. Even Colts still makes the the Peacemaker. It's limited production, but it's still there. You can actually go buy a Colt, original Colt, if you want to. Then there's master shooters like Jerry Michalak. You see him shooting a double action revolver. It just makes you want the gun because the guy is so good with it. But revolver sales are increasing these days, from hunting hand cannons like the X-Frames to the tiny CCW revolvers that Ruger puts out. I'm happy to report that revolvers are getting more popular. And there's some really good deals in the used market if you know what to look for. So if you're going to be looking for a used revolver, that's what we're going to focus on today. First thing, before you look at a revolver, make sure it's unloaded. And then last episode we talked about, when you buy a used gun, to make sure that it's clean first. This is very important with a revolver. You got to make sure that the forcing cone isn't leaded up, and you got to make sure the barrel isn't leaded up if you're going to see any damage. Now, the design issue with revolvers is that it has to be cleaned by the muzzle. And most of the damage I've seen on revolvers has been caused by improper cleaning methods. You know, people taking their cleaner on just shoving it down the barrel. There are little bore guides that you can get that you can put over your cleaning rod, so when you're cleaning your barrel from the muzzle, the cleaning rod does not come in contact with the crown of the gun. So you want to look for any dings or deep scratches caused by the muzzle. Another type of damage you're going to get from the muzzle is removal of a squib load. When you remove a stuck bullet, you always have to use a brass or polymer squib rod. Never use steel or aluminum rods or any power tools to remove any stuck bullet, because they will damage your rifling and they will damage your crown. If you're removing a stuck bullet, the material must always be a softer material than what the gun is made of, or you're going to do damage. Now, if you cannot remove a blockage on your own, what I would do, like, I've been at the range where people have actually got squib loads in their guns, and they don't have a squib rod. So they take the gun home, and the next week the guy shows up with the same gun, forgetting what the squib load in the barrel, and destroyed the gun. So if you do have a squib load and you cannot mechanically remove it right then and there at the range, disassemble the gun. Do not keep the gun in operating condition. If you've got a revolver, take the crane out. Take the cylinder crane right off so you cannot physically fire the gun. An autoloader, take the barrel out, put it separately. So if you forget about it, you can't go and use the gun right away. Oh, yeah, why is the cylinder out? Oh, shit, yeah, I got a squib load in it. So make the gun unfireable if you cannot remove the squib.
Okay, I'm gonna interject here for a quick second. I don't own any semi-auto handguns, but I've heard about taking barrels out. What's involved in taking the barrel out of a semi-auto?
Usually there's a takedown pin where you separate the slide from the frame, and then the barrel just slides right out. It's a little bit different with, say, 1911, you have to take a barrel bushing out and slide it from the front. But because it's two separate units, usually once you take the takedown pin and separate the frame from the slide, the barrel can easily be removed.
So what's holding the barrel to the frame?
To the frame? Well, usually with my 1911, there's a takedown pin. And what's holding in there is actually the spring is holding it tensioned in there. It's more or less free-floating in the slide. And the only thing that's holding it in place is a little... On a 1911, there's a pin that goes to the bottom, and there's a link in the bottom of the barrel, and the pin goes to the link. So when the gun moves, it's just pivoting on the link.
Oh, okay. So they're not, like, screwed in or...
They're not screwed in. The only one that's different is, say, for my Grand Power... there is no actual linkage holding the barrel, because the barrel is a rotating design and it actually rotates inside the frame in the slide. But usually there's a takedown pin that has to be removed so you can take the barrel out of the gun.
Oh, okay.
You can't separate the gun unless you actually take that pin out, because it holds the whole thing together. So once you take the pin out, it allows you to separate everything.
Oh, okay. Just curious.
Okay. Oh, that's right. You don't have a semi-auto.
No.
You ever taken the bolt out of your Savage?
Yes. Yeah.
Good stuff. It's a little tricky getting the bolt out of that thing.
Yeah. No. If I ever actually clean it, which doesn't happen too often, but you know, I strip it right down.
Well, that's what I would do. We'll talk about cleaning 1022s at another point. I know a little trick for cleaning 1022s too. But we won't, no more squirrels right now. We'll try to stay on topic tonight for a change. Another thing you want to check on the gun, too, to see if it has had a squib load at one time, look for a bulge in the barrel. If you see any bulge or any discoloration of the metal, it's a sure indication that there has been an obstruction at one time. You can usually physically see the bulge in a revolver. Sometimes it's hidden in an autoloader. That's why it's a good idea if you do buy use autoloader, take it apart, open it up, check the barrel. One thing you want to look for is discoloration. I actually know somebody who had a squib load in a barrel, then he took a blowtorch to the barrel, and he hammered it out so you couldn't see that he'd had a squib load in the barrel.
Oh, good dear.
And I'm telling you, you're changing the metal structure, and it's an extremely dangerous thing to do because you've created this huge weak point in the barrel, and you're going to have problems down the road. It doesn't happen often, but I have actually know a person who did it. So that's why I'm saying if it's an auto loader, take the barrel out. It's a little bit easier on a revolver because you can physically see the barrel in front of you. Now, on the other end of the barrel, we have to examine. Actually, I guess I should have my revolver with me so I know, I see what I'm talking about here. So on the other end of the barrel, you have what's called the forcing cone. Now, you can get some serious erosion at the forcing cone. See, for example, this the gun I'm showing now, it's a Smith & Wesson Model 19 -3. With -3? Yeah. What the dash means is it's the third change been made to the gun.
The gun that you're showing the people listening to the podcast?
Yeah, see, I'm holding up to the microphone. You can see the Model 19.
I can see it because we're on Skype.
But, if you can see it, you notice the forcing cone is nice and sharp. There's no deterioration. What's happened is that these guns were originally designed for, it was originally a 38 Special, and I believe Bill Jordan talked Smith & Wesson to putting a 3, what are you doing? Go lay down, buddy. Putting a 357 barrel on it. So it's kind of peppy when you're shooting 357s in a K-frame revolver. And then somebody discovered that if you can fire really super hot 125 grain loads and get super, super accuracy. So you're going to come across, if you're looking for any of these old revolvers, you really want to check that forcing cone for erosion. Because they had a lot of problems with the K-frame, such as this one, the Ruger Security 6, and even the newer GP100s will erode. Because the guns weren't designed to fire this load. What it is that you're shooting a lighter bullet, so your cartridge has more of a distance to travel out of the cylinder before it hits the forcing cone. And what has happened is that normally most of your gas is expanding when barrel and on a 158 grain load, because you've got a longer bullet, your actual gases aren't all expanding until the bullet's actually in the barrel. With 125 grain, because it's a shorter cartridge, it's losing a lot of its pressure point before it even hits the barrel cylinder gap. So when it fires, you get like twice the amount of gas pressure jumping from the chamber to the forcing cone, and it's escaping out the BC gap. So it's chewing the crap out of these forcing cones because all these hot gases that are normally expanded through the barrel are being expanded as it's going through the barrel cylinder gap. I got to kick the dog out of the room here. He's crying away. There you go, buddy. If I don't bring him in, he whines and cries. If I bring him in, he whines and cries.
If you're not a dog lover, then you shouldn't be listening to the show.
Oh, well, you should see my dog. He's massive. Okay, so that's, you really want to check if you see. You want the edges to be sharp. You don't want to see them rounded or chunks missing out of it. That's a sure sign that the gun's had a lot of hot loads through it. So you want the edges, outer diameter of the forcing cone to be sharp, and you want the inner diameter of the forcing cone to be sharp. A little rounded is okay, but you don't want to see any serious erosion because the life of the gun isn't going to last that long. It burns them out really, really fast. Now, another thing you want to check is if the cylinder rattles when the hammer is pulled back. So if you pull back the hammer, a little bit of play is fine. That's acceptable. But you don't want to be able to, if you shake the gun, you don't want to hear the cylinder backing around. Okay. At the same time, you actually want to check the ratchets at the back, too, to make sure that they're all even and sharp, that they haven't been rounded and tipped off.
Now, the ratchets are That's the mechanism that rotates the cylinder.
Yes. It's actually like a series of, this one has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teeth that align the barrel, align the cylinder to the barrel for each shot. So when you cock it, the ratchets allow it to rotate to the next firing position. So if you cock it and it rattles, it's not a good thing because it means the cylinder and barrel lineup might be out a little bit. But it's a little bit, you don't want to shake it and hear it rattle. Like it could be a little bit of play, that's quite normal. Another thing you got to watch is when you actually have it, so when you're checking the cylinder, check and make sure you close the cylinder, you pull the hammer back, make sure you shake it a little bit, make sure there's not a lot of excessive rattle. At the same time, while it's cocked, push the hammer. The hammer should not fall. If the hammer falls, there's an issue with your sear and the gun needs to be taken to a gunsmith. You can do that at once. You can check the cylinder and you can make sure that the hammer doesn't fall. Another thing you should do is that there is a gap between the cylinder and the forcing cone, and this is called your BC gap, barrel cylinder gap. The gap itself should not be more than 0.01 tenth of an inch. So you can cock the hammer for each chamber. You can take get a feeler gauge, and you can just slide it through. You just want to make sure that each one has equal gap. And this one all looks okay.
Now, I wonder, for our more seasoned listeners, would you be able to use, what are they called? I just lost it. A spark plug gap checker.
If it was the proper size, but that's more of a hook, like a square notch, isn't it? I'm sure if the size is the same, it would probably work.
Yeah, I think they're generally a shim.
Yeah, I've seen for the feeler gauges are actually a straight piece of steel, but that would work too, as long as it's the same measurement.
Yeah. And my dad, my dad's got one of those, and it's got a whole bunch of different gauges on it, like the different thicknesses. When I saw in the show notes the seeing it written out, I was like, oh my goodness, that you could use a spark plug checker.
I'm sure you could, because all you're doing is just measuring the gap. But it's the same thing.
Although our younger listeners probably have no idea what that is or what I'm talking about. Sorry, a little squirrel.
That's good. Well, you just want to make sure that the gap is equal. You know, you don't want to have. You could also. I had a revolver that it was out a little bit, and I took it to my gunsmith, and he simply put a shim inside, and it closed up the gap. So it's not a major issue if the gap's up a little bit. It can be adjusted by a competent gunsmith. They do make shims that are made specifically for closing up the gaps on revolvers. I never knew there was such a thing until I went and had my gun checked out a few years ago. He goes, your gap's a little big. Here, it's okay. I got the proper size shim, and he fixed it for me. I think he charged me $40, and I had a trigger job done. I had the sear fixed. You know, a gunsmith would have charged me a couple $100. He charged me $40 in a case of beer when he came over to my house, which was a good deal.
You always gotta love the guys that charge in beer.
Well, that's why he does. He does it for beer money. He's on a pension. He's on a fixed income. So he doesn't charge a lot of money for his work, but I just throw in the beer because I know he likes his beer.
That's awesome.
Where else are you going to get a gunsmith actually come to your house and work on your guns? Because it's a pain in the butt to get an ATT to take over to his place. So I said, well, Yuli, just come over here and I'll pay you for it and I'll give you some gas money and I'll give you some money for your time and here's a case of beer. What kind do you like? Now, another thing you got to check, too, is on a double-action revolver. You want to make sure that the crane, fits tightly to the frame. If it doesn't go in there and lock up, you can have a sprung crane, and that's something that you have to take to a gunsmith and have. You can do a lot of this work yourself, but if you know very little about a firearm, I would always suggest taking it to a gunsmith. Now, another thing you got to watch for, because you're checking to make sure that your crane is straight. You also want to make sure that your ejection rod is straight. I've actually seen this happen where you get some really, really hot loads. It's very difficult to eject the cases from the cylinder. A lot of times people will actually tap the ejector rod because that's what extracts your shells too. And I had some Wolf 44 factory loads that were brutal. And, I mean, I really had to push hard on the ejector. I take a piece of wood. I had to hammer them out. That's how bad these loads were. So you really want to make sure that your director rod is straight and that your cylinder spins nice and true. If it doesn't spin true, it means it's going to be out of alignment. So that's another thing that you should pass on. Another thing on a revolver is you look at the side plate. Rivers don't have them because it's a big, massive frame, and it's internal. But the Smith & Wessons actually have a side plate, and you remove the three screws. Well, one is for the cylinder. The other two open up the side plate. There's a trick to getting the side plates in and off on a revolver. You just basically just tap it lightly, and it will pop off. Some people are very impatient, and they'll take a screwdriver to it, and they'll force it, and they'll damage the side plate, and possibly damage some of the internal components. So you want to make sure that your side plate isn't all dinged up from somebody doing some disassembly incorrectly. The other thing I like, too, is I mentioned earlier, I don't like messed up screws. So if you find your screws on the side plate are all chewed up, it means somebody's been screwing around in there over and over again and doesn't know what they're doing. So it's another sure sign that you should pass.
Somebody's been screwing with the screws?
Somebody's been screwing with the screws. Well, the last used one I bought, this one's perfect. There's no damage on this one. But I had to order new screws. And I actually had to take the gunsmith and have them drill them out because whoever did it had chewed them up so bad that you couldn't even unscrew the side plate.
Oh, no.
So I took it to Yuli, and he tapped them out for me, and we ordered some new screws for it. Yeah, it's a minor thing, but it's a sign. If there's damage in that area, it means somebody's gone into it many, many times, so it's just a sign to look for.
Well, and if somebody's going to be damaging the screws, you got to wonder what kind of quality work they've been doing inside the gun or what they've been doing inside the gun as well, right?
Exactly. It's just a warning that there could be a little more to it. Now, another thing you got to check is the firing pin. You want to make sure that firing pin is nice and rounded. You don't want to make, like this one actually has an internal firing pin. A lot of the guns nowadays have a transfer bar system where the energy is transferred to a bar, which is attached to a firing pin. So you want to make sure that the firing pin is nice and rounded and smooth. You don't want to see any chips or dings in that firing pin, because if you have a sharp firing pin and it ruptures the primer, you could have a bit of an issue. You don't want gases coming out of both ends. But it's hard to see the firing pin with the transfer bar, so you really have to look at it. And it's not a lot of things people look at, but the same thing with an autoloader. You're buying a used autoloader, you want to check the firing pin. If it's cracked or there's a ding out of it, there's issues with the gun that needs to be replaced. Now, the only other thing I wanted to touch on briefly is that in the used revolver market, you find a lot of old PPC revolvers, and they're good deals. A friend of mine had his Charlton. He had it for sale for $650. It dropped to $600. It dropped to $550. It dropped to $500. It dropped to $475. It finally dropped to $400 for somebody bought it, because they're just not a gun that people are they want to get their first revolver. They don't look at PPC guns. They look at them. 686, or they're looking at the Dirty Harry models. But you can get a really nicely tuned PPC gun dirt cheap if you look around for it. The problem is with the PPC revolver is that they have been tuned for double action only. So this one, for example, is an old PPC revolver. So the trigger pull on this double action is like 6 pounds. The single action pull is 2 pounds. It's got a hair trigger. So it's the same thing. Because it's designed to fire double action only, they usually, a lot of times the sear is actually even out of alignment, because there's a little trigger travel stop. So the trigger only goes back so far, then it's held in place, and then it's a slight squeeze after that. So quite often the PPC revolvers, if you can fire it single action, you're talking a pound and a half trigger pull. That's why a lot of them actually bob the hammers off, so you can't physically fire it single action. So if the hammer is not bobbed and the trigger stop is backed out, it's going to fire single action on the PPC trigger, but it's going to be super, super light. And the same as I mentioned earlier, on a PPC gun, if you can back out the over-travel screw on the trigger and you cock the hammer, push on the hammer. If it falls forward, which happened with my 625, it would fall forward if you push it. It had to go and get serviced. But if you look around, you can get some really, really good deals on the used market. and they're dirt cheap. I got this. I got a Model 10 that had a Bomar sight put on it, which was tuned for PPC. I got this Model 19-3, which is also tuned for PPC. I got the two of them for $700. I sold the Model 10 back to the original owner, the guy that owned it 20 years ago, for $400. So my cost on this gun was $300. And it's got a sweet 2-pound trigger pull, and it will shoot the crap out of the X-ring all day long.
Now, have we actually ever said what PPC is?
Police is police pistol combat, and it is a course of fire that was originally designed for the police. And they opened it up to civilians back in the 60s, and it became really popular. You'd have the police and civilians competing together. The police no longer shoot that course of fire, but PPC is still, it's dying, to be honest with you, but it's still alive and well in Ontario. There's a couple of different, there is a national PPC organization, and then there's also the CSSA runs the PPC in Ontario as well.
Would it be, I'm not familiar with PPC. I know what it is. I know of it, but I've never seen it. Would it be fair to say that IPSC's kind of the next generation, kind of the next evolution of it?
No, not even close. IPSC is so far down the road and evolved compared to PPC. Because remember, this was originally designed in the 50s. So when you're shooting your stages in IPSC, you're not moving between stages. You're stationary. And the only movement you do is sitting, standing, and kneeling.
In
That's
PPC?
Basically it. In PPC. You're not running between stages
at
all.
Oh, okay.
It was meant as... Then you take use of a barricade, left-hand barricade, right-hand barricade. It's really antiquated for law enforcement. That's why they don't do it anymore.
Oh, okay.
But it's fun. It's fun. It's the last match I went into. It was had to be 10 years ago. I signed up. I think it cost me $40, and I went in unclassified. So when you go in unclassified, they automatically put you as High Master. Well, nobody won the match in High Master, so a couple months later, I got a check for $100 and medal in the mail because apparently I won the match and I didn't even know it. As a High Master, as a High Master. But it's different. The whole attitude I found with PPC shooters is a lot different than IPSC shooters. They take it very seriously, and they use such downloaded rounds. It's same with your cowboy guys. You can actually see the bullet hit the backer. The only rule for them is that the bullet has to pass through the backer.
Yeah.
A lot of the ranges do run it still. Northumberland still has a PPC league. MCO up in just north of me, Bowenville, has a PPC league. But action shooting has really taken over.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think. I don't think my club has PPC. It did at one time, and it might have had kind of an unofficial PPC where kind of all the old-timers that shot the PPC would get together, but I don't think Kremlin has anything official. But they've also moved to IPSC now, too, the last couple of years, and there's been a huge explosion at Kremlin with IPSC. It's just London's taken it, embraced it, and they're going with it. They seem to really like it.
Well, actually, I was speaking to, because Chris Wachowski asked me if I'd be interested in coming on the show and talking about PPC, but I haven't shot it in, over 10 years. So I suggested my friend Randy, he's the PPC instructor, Eastern instructor for Canadian Short CSSA. And Andy didn't want to do it. Because he's so disillusioned with PPC these days, because the CSSA more or less took it over about 10, 15 years ago. And Randy only puts on one course a year. They're not posting any of the PPC matches on their website anymore. They're not really supporting it at all. So it's slowly fading away. It's all the old timers, and when I was shooting, I was the youngest person shooting it 10 years ago.
Well, from the couple of chair now.
Yeah. I'm the oldest podcaster in Canada, I guess, eh?
Yeah, but nobody'd ever know because you don't. I don't think I've ever seen a picture of you on Facebook.
Yeah, there's pictures on there.
Is there?
Yeah, yeah. If you go right now on the background, I believe it's me instructing one of the Boy Scouts. But if you go in there, there are pictures of me.
Is there? Oh, I've never actually. As my 16-year-old daughter would put it, creeped you on Facebook. So all I generally see is just the profile pictures that people use.
I've creeped a few pictures. I'll go in there sometimes if I can see what's it. Who was it? I don't know who it was. There was nothing on this person's webpage, on their Facebook thing. It's some silly little picture. If you're, I wonder what this person actually looks like. And there's nothing. Some people don't want anybody to know what they look like.
I remember saying to my daughter once, I was asking her about a picture on her Facebook. And she's like, Daddy, like, why are you creeping me? And I'm like, Sarah, what does that mean? She's like looking at me. She's like, you're a loser. And walks away. I'm like, freak thing. Like, what? Why are you, like, isn't that what you're supposed to do? Look at, people put pictures up, you go look at pictures. I'm like, I don't know what this creeping thing is.
I got quite upset when somebody called me a creeper. So what do you mean a creeper? I'm thinking, and that's, I guess that's a term you use if you're looking at people's stuff. But yeah. I remember somebody called me a creeper a couple years ago. What are you talking about? I'm not a creeper. I'm thinking, they're calling you a creep, right?
Yeah, like you're, like, stalking or doing, like, you know, I was like, I don't get this.
Well, it's a public social forum, so you put your pictures on there for people to see. That's the whole point.
That's I'm standing in front of her with, like, deer caught in the headlights going, I don't get this. Like, it's a public forum to put your public pictures for the public to see. So how is that being creepy? But, yeah, no, it was funny.
How old is she, 16?
Yeah, she just turned 16 a couple months ago. But it was, this was a couple years ago now, I guess. But it was funny. Daddy, why are you creeping me and my friends? I'm like,
I'm a creep.
Sarah, I have no idea what you're talking about. It's just like, oh, terminology.
Well, you know, we're old and we don't know what it means.
Exactly.
I remember a couple years ago, my nephew was using the term groovy. I'm like, really? Apparently groovy's really, really popular now with a lot of the kids.
Yeah,
I haven't heard that since I was like 6, 7 years old.
That's Wanda's term. She's always saying groovy.
Groovy?
Yeah. So
I'm the Wayne's world. My thing's always been excellent.
Excellent.
I've always said excellent. You ever watch Wayne's World? That's exactly what it was like for me growing up in Scarborough in the 70s.
Awesome.
It's identical. Everybody did get that Peter Frampton LP in the mailbox. I was the only one that never actually owned a copy of that record. I didn't like it.
Now, before we get scrolling too far away, did you have anything else you wanted to add before we move on?
No, that's it about the guns. But as I'm saying, you can really get some good deals out there if you look around and you know what you're looking for. You know, it's like a brand new 686 is going to cost you $900 if you want to shoot 38 to 357, or you can shop around and spend $300 and get yourself a gun that'll do just the same thing and leave more money in your pocket. So the used market is good. Look around.
No, and this actually kind of brings something to mind. So if somebody's new and they're listening to this and they hear you say the used market and look for deals, what would some places be that they could go look for deals? Or
well, there are. Market? I've never used it, but there is an equipment exchange on Canadian Gun Nuts.
Which is a website, a forum.
Website forum. There is also I think it's called Canadian Access to Firearms. There's a newspaper that comes out once a month, and it's nothing but retailers as well as used guns as well. A lot of times your local gun shop will take stuff in on trades.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. And I know at our club, I'm not sure about other clubs, but quite often there's a board, basically a members board, where you can post up all in any guns and gun-related stuff that you're selling.
Yeah, we have a big bulletin board at our club, and when I belonged to Union, they actually had a binder, and you would go in and you would give what you had to the club president, and he would put it in the binder, and anything that was old or sold, and they actually kept track of them. So if you sold it, they would mark it sold and everything else. But yeah, usually at your clubs, you can come across good deals. Just watch out for the old timers trying to sign you crap like we were talking about last week.
Yep, yep. Yeah, I was just sitting here thinking, if I was new listening to this, I'd be like, okay, yeah, the used market, but what does that mean? So I just thought we would mention that real quick.
Your price is going to vary on the condition of the gun. Like you can say, for example, since we're talking about the Model 19, this one in the used market would probably go for about $650 because it's in such good shape. I just got a real deal on it. But your price is going to depend on the condition of the gun. So if it's in excellent shape, you're going to be paying top dollar for it. If it's good or very good, where there might be some blemishes and scratches, you're still getting a gun that may be mechanically flying, but there's a few blemishes on it. So I use my local gun shop. I'm looking at, and we're going to plug Williams Arms again. We don't have any sponsors, but I do like their website. So I'll go into Williams, or I'll go into Accuracy Plus, which are local. Ganyans is local. And I'll actually go into their web pages and see if they have what I'm looking for and see what condition they rate it. And I'll go to the different stores and see what they have similar. But, you know, it never be in a rush. Just shop around. You're going to come across a good deal sooner or later.
Yeah, for me personally, because I'm still so new, I would focus on the local scene, club level, or going to the local gun shops so you could actually see it. When you get buying a used gun online, if you know what to ask, and you know, because they'll send you pictures, right? But you need to know what to ask for, because if there is something, if there's a blemish that they are not coming forward with, or they're trying to hope that somebody doesn't know to ask, then you may end up with something that you're not going to be happy with. So, me personally, just because of my inexperience, if I were to buy a used, I would buy it local. And if you go to a gun shop, at least that way you also have somewhere to go back to and say, hey, listen, like, this was wrong with it, or, you know, I got it out to range and, you know, it didn't do this, or it did this when it's not supposed to. Whereas, exactly. When you buy it online, you know, I've never bought it online, so, you know, I don't know how good people are as far as returning or making good on something that
I've heard a few horror stories. There's one guy that was selling stuff to people on Gun Nuts and then sending people empty boxes. I'm with you. I don't like to buy something online. I want to physically see it before I buy it.
Yeah. But there is the option if somebody out there does want that. You know, it's there. And, yeah, I would just say, you know, buyer beware.
Yeah, if you know the person, or if the person is reputable, like they're, I don't go on Gun Nuts very often, but there are people that sell, and the retailers online. You can get good deals. Myself, especially buying, this revolver's an old, this revolver's from the 70s. I would really want to inspect it myself. The person can say it has this, it has that, but you're not going to know what wear and damage it's going to have on it to actually have it in your hands. So
right.
I'm old school. I'd rather actually physically test fire it. I physically want to see it because it's an older model. A newer gun, you know, you could probably get, like, if you're buying a new AR and you know it's made in the last couple of years, odds are you're not going to have any problems with it. But if you're buying something that's 30, 40 years old, you really want to check it out yourself.
Yeah, I agree. So I think that will do it for this week. So for closing, I just want to remind everyone, the Armed Squirrel Project monthly shoot is for December is out. If you go to their Facebook page, it's Christmas trees. So you got to shoot some Christmas balls off the tree.
Not saying it.
Mr. and Mrs. iTunes, that was clean because we're talking about Christmas balls. So you got to shoot some balls.
And it's an easy target. It's 7 yards. So
7 yards, and it's a pistol. So I'm not sure, because I've got no rounds loaded right now, so I'm not sure I'll be able to shoot this one, so I'll have to load up some rounds from my revolvers. But if I can, I'll get it out get out there and shoot it. So that's, I don't have any shout-outs or emails. Folks, got an email address, so make sure you email us, host@newshootercanada.ca, or you can get a hold of us through Facebook or our website, which is newshootercanada.ca. I'm not sure if I noticed, if I mentioned newshootercanada.ca yet this
I never
episode.
Knew we had iTunes.
Yeah, we're on iTunes.
We're on iTunes.
And I don't know if there's still the BlackBerry podcast listings, but we were on there too.
So have you actually checked the iTunes to see if we had any feedback?
No, I'm not even sure I know how to do that. I've never done it before. We could, maybe that's why we don't have any emails, because people are like trashing us on iTunes. I have no idea.
Oh man, we should call Matthew and ask him how we check our iTunes account. I don't use iTunes because everything Apple is proprietary, so I don't put. I want nothing to do with iTunes. The only shout out I have, I guess we sort of threw Brian under the bus a couple weeks ago about the T-shirts. He actually messaged me and Stacy last week, and he's putting the T-shirt order through. So we are getting our T-shirts, so thank you very much, Mr. Bolivar. I guess a little public humiliation did work. It wasn't my intention, but I'm glad it worked. Actually, after I made the comment on the show, I got a message from Stacy saying, "Are you trying to get me into trouble?" And then a couple days later, it's like, "It worked! We got our T-shirts!" So thank you again, Brian.
And you're welcome, Stacy.
Yeah, you're welcome, Stacy.
Oh, that's excellent. Excellent.
I love the T-shirts because I wear them as a thing. I wear them at work all the time, and I'm always getting comments on them. And actually, it's surprising that they're positive comments. A lot of people recognize what it is. Oh, that's a C7. Well, that's really cool. And I think it's really cool having an AR behind a Canadian Maple Leaf and having a Canadian Service Condition logo. It just, and I like the saying on the back, shoot straight, shoot safe, and shoot often. So,
cool.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Brian. And I think that's going to be a wrap. So until the next episode, keep your barrels pointed downrange and smoking.
And take your kids shooting.
Take care, guys.
Good night. I like guns. I like the way they look. I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small.
Thank you for taking the time and listening to our show. Our audience is important to us, and we encourage our listeners to contact the show with feedback, suggestions, or questions that you may have. You can contact the guys at host@newshootercanada.ca. And please like our Facebook page. Thanks for listening, and have a groovy day.
God made the animals, and God made the trees. God made you, well, hell, he even made me. And he gave me this voice so I could be a singer. You tell me why I've got a trigger finger. I like guns, I like the way they look. I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small. They're for sale, well, I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns.